Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we speak with Eve Lorgan, author of the books Love Bite and The Dark Side of Cupid. In past interviews, listeners may recall the work of Dr. Joe Slate and Dr. Konstantin Korotkov in measuring intention and studying the human auric field. Dr. Joe Slate is the author of Psychic Vampires, Protection from Energy Predators and Parasites. His research into human energy systems has been funded by the U.S. Army and the Parapsychology Foundation of New York. His work is important when discussing the concepts of parasitism and psychic attacks. We reference that research and also interference, as initially described in Carissa Conti's past two interviews. She's the author of the book Chasing Phantoms, Personal Experiences, Observations, and Theories into Abduction Mind Control Phenomena. Carissa's research is critical to add in because she kept track of her experiences in regular journal entries that would otherwise be lost. Why is it important? Well, her work helped a bigger pattern emerge when categorizing the types of interference and backdrop people. So with this background, a foundation is set for regular listeners to this show to look at an unconventional area of research conducted by our guest, Eve Lorgan. Now, she wrote two books, Love Bite, Alien Interference in Human Love Relationships, and The Dark Side of Cupid. These books examine case studies of alien abductees, obsessive relationships, and interference, from puppy love to violent divorces. Eve Lorgan demonstrates how aliens may be somehow involved with orchestrating these dramas. We'll also talk about the work of her colleague, the late Barbara Bartholik, who with Carla Turner uncovered evidence on the negative aspects of alien visitation through examining many individual abductee experiences. We'll also look at Eve Lorgan's own interference and her experiences. She holds a bachelor's degree in biochemistry from San Francisco State University and a master's degree in counseling psychology. These interviews with Eve will essentially conclude the discussion into the research of interference and the etheric realm. This is the first part of a two-hour interview with Eve Lorgan. Eve, welcome to Another News.
Thank you.
We've talked with Dr. Joe Slate about his book Psychic Vampires, and the research really lays a foundation for the different components of the human etheric body that can be accessed. It's an area that a lot of us take for granted, but these components that we can't see are essential for maintaining a healthy immune system and a vibrant state. Can you please share with listeners how you came to write the books Love Bite and The Dark Side of Cupid, and how this area connects with Dr. Slate's work?
That's a good question. Actually, I more recently came into contact with Dr. Slate and his book because it was so good, actually, about psychic vampirism, because a lot of my work ultimately pointed to what I call energy vampirism and psychic vampirism. So to preface why I wrote my two books, my first book was published in 2000 called The Love Bite, and it's about alien interference in human love relationships and connections. And I actually came across this through the work of Dr. Carla Turner and Barbara Bartholik, who are both, of course, now deceased, but they both were researchers in more primarily the alien abduction and UFO syndrome, as well as what we call military abductions now. And so it was actually Carla Turner's lecture that I went to way back in the spring of 1995 in San Diego, where she reported many of the things that some people we knew locally were experiencing and some are of our own. So one of my colleagues, James Bartley, also attended this lecture, and he knew Carla because he had chatted with her before. And so we talked a little bit about her books and just, you know, really encouraged her to tell more about some of the darker side of what was happening in abductions, and especially what we call the MILAB and the underground facility types of memories that people were coming up with. And so I guess after we studied her work a little bit, her mentor is, or was, Barbara Bartholik. So Barbara Bartholik is the one who did the hypnosis and the hypnotic regressions on the abductees who had the different abduction experiences that Carla actually detailed and wrote about, like the Ted Rice case. And that book was called Masquerade of Angels. It was really, really good. And then the other one that she wrote was called Taken, and that was about five or more different military abduction alien abductee cases where they had both alien encounters and some kind of human military and mind control component in their experience. As well as, then she wrote a book about her own experiences called Into the Fringe. So we got to know Barbara Bartholik. Actually, it was after Carla Turner's death in January of 1996. She died of cancer, which was, you know, considered questionable at the time because her work was so controversial. And, you know, she got a lot of flack for it because it wasn't going according to the current trends of, you know, what was going on in the UFO circles at the time, because it was considered too fringe and negative. But Barbie actually was really good about getting details in people's experiences and knew how to uncover what we call screen memories in abductions. So we learned a lot from Barbie. And after Carla Turner died, I became a more closer correspondence with Barbara Bartholik because I was running my own support group for people who've had, you know, alien encounters, MILABs, and what I call anomalous trauma. And anomalous trauma kind of surrounds more things than just alien abduction, but it's that and paranormal things and the MILAB experience and mind control and ritual abuse and all kinds of weird things, basically. So to make a long story short, several people in my group were having what they felt were manipulated dreams and compulsions and emotional dramas that they felt their alien handlers were trying to basically set them up in certain love relationships and what we call the love obsession experience. And this was something that Barbie knew quite a bit about because she had done regressions on people for something like 25 years, as well as actually working closely with Jacques Vallée for a short period of time in her early research. So she had a lot of information that really didn't get out there about all the other different kinds of things that happened within the alien abduction or encounter syndrome that went beyond the medical exams that you hear about in the literature at the time, and the hybrid projects and the implants, and that happens too, but she was able to get a lot more details about the other weird things that would happen, such as how people's experiences and their lives were being engineered on a much more detailed level, including their love relationships. So I wrote a book about just that element because it was going on with several people in my support group, and I interviewed many other people as well as doing an overview of some other well-known cases like the Linda Cortile case and the Ted Rice case and another case where a woman wrote a book named Mia Adams. She wrote a book called The Exiles. So I basically did a whole hypothesis and working theory based on really what Barbara shared with me. And I really give a lot of my credit and honor to Barbara Bartholik for helping me understand a lot of this and share her own research and some of her own cases as well. So in my second book, The Dark Side of Cupid, that one just came out in 2012. And in that book, I actually share three of her older cases, which were pretty basically hardcore cases, which involved things that mimicked, or I don't want to say mimic, but they closely resembled elements of demonic possession in some of her cases that linked UFOs and abductions with a demonic element. And, of course, that's something that's considered really taboo in the community because most people look at it in terms of the extraterrestrial hypothesis. And in real life, you know, basically there's a fine line. You know, there's a basically it goes from one level to the other, and there's just a whole bunch of things in between. So in real life, there's a whole bunch of strange things that happen, including manipulation of love relationships. So, and then that does tie into the whole psychic vampirism thing, which I detail actually more in The Dark Side of Cupid. So that's a little bit of an intro. I know it's wordy, but that's how it got started.
It's a very involved story. I would expect that to be the case. In the first book, Love Bite, you have a chapter on the Linda Cortile case that you had mentioned, and I point this out because it was a well-known, amazing abduction case Bud Hopkins wrote about as well. But can you tell us what had happened and the subsequent love bite?
Okay, so the original book and the case was, of course, investigated very fully by Bud Hopkins. And he actually wrote a book called the Brooklyn Bridge Witnessed. He called it Witnessed. And I still have the book laying around somewhere, but I can't find it. But what I did is I not only read the book and went through it, and then interviewed Linda Cortile with some correspondence to find out more about the bonding drama that took place between the alien handlers of Linda and a man involved in witnessing the incident in 1989. It was November of 1989 that three men below the high-rise that she lived in Manhattan basically witnessed her floating through the air, escorted by three aliens while she was like in a white nightgown being floated through the air to a UFO craft. And it basically shocked the hell out of these witnesses, who were two FBI agents and one VIP from another country who was probably on some kind of official business in New York at the time. So that's actually how the case started out, and there was many, many different things that happened. And it really wasn't until a year and a few months after the incident itself they got news of the abduction, that actually they were all abducted. So apparently Linda was abducted independently, and then the other three men who actually watched it from above found out later with their flashback memories, and maybe, I don't know if any of them got a regression later, but they didn't remember till like a year and 2 or 3 months after that 1989 incident of actually being abducted and being taken on the beach where Linda was, being with the aliens and digging holes in the sand. And so they all basically had their own independent experience relating to that abduction, and they discovered, of course, later they all had independent connections to her and to the aliens. So it basically played out as this really unusual drama with these, FBI agents and this VIP who wanted to put Linda under surveillance because of, of witnessing this thing. And they thought, they thought she was like a spy from a foreign country, so that's why they put her under surveillance. And the two FBI agents came and paid her a visit not long after they witnessed it and pretended they were cops and asked her a bunch of questions. And she couldn't really answer the questions because she, when you're abducted, you don't have any control over it. A lot of times you don't remember everything. And so I think that one of the FBI agents was really crazed and paranoid and thought that, she was lying and thinking that she was some kind of spy. So it was pretty amazing, this whole story. She ends up getting kidnapped by those two men who wanted to interrogate her and, play the good cop, bad cop thing with her and ask her all kinds of questions about, seeing if she works for some foreign agency. And of course, the VIP, who was from a foreign country, put him up to it. So I guess they were hired by this really important, I think he was a South American, Spanish-speaking diplomat, and I don't know who he is. They didn't name him in the book, but it's probably well known now who he is. So anyway, they kidnapped her, and there's this whole scenario, and then Richard, who's one of the FBI agents, kind of has a thing for her, and he has like feelings for her, and he doesn't know why. And turns out that, as a child, he was also abducted by aliens and pre-bonded with her in joint, what we call mutual abduction experiences, several times in his teen years, like every 6 months for like a period of 5 years, and then a later bonding where he believed there could have been sexual activity and a possible impregnation kind of thing. So he actually remembered this after going through regressions, and he had spontaneous flashbacks that he told Bud Hopkins about much later that fit in with the story, and their witness of the whole thing on the sand, the beach. They called it the Lady of the Sands beach incident, where Linda was with the aliens as if under their instruction and control, speaking an alien language that they witnessed, hearing telepathically, by the way. And they're like digging holes in the sand and as if they're studying it for some environmental reason, and, speaking telepathically to the men, which really freaked out one of the men who became crazed and obsessed and then kidnapped her later independently and just basically went nuts. He had some obsession, but I don't think he handled it well. Of course, what I was thinking, in the book, I rewrote the whole story, but really focused on the whole drama and the manipulation of the drama of the love obsession and how the aliens basically were just doing this if you look back from a larger perspective, you see that there's some kind of drama going on that the aliens are engineering and staging for some purpose. And of course, I hypothesize not only is it because of the love obsession between the two, but it's also almost as a mockery of what they can do to the human race, as well as important VIP officials and government people, and basically manipulate them to have these obsessions and crazed behaviors. You know, it was pretty amazing what happened. And poor Linda, I just feel for her, you know, the things that she had to go through. And she probably keeps a pretty low profile now. Yeah. And what was interesting is Bud seemed to think that with the bonding scenarios that took place between abductees, he didn't seem to think that it was as important as maybe other areas of the abduction reports, and seemed to think that it only happened to a minor percentage of abductees. But after basically doing research with Barbara Bartholik over many years, she didn't really agree that she seemed to think that this happened much more often and was much more commonplace than what was really being reported. And something like almost everybody, or at least 30%, I found about 30% of those who I interviewed believed that their relationships were somehow staged, orchestrated, manipulated, disrupted in some way, so that the aliens have a much bigger role in their lives than just simple, you know, harvesting of eggs or whatever it is.
Yeah, it really backfired on those
agents. Thing. I mean, when you think about it, and I think people don't want to think about the sense of powerlessness and being played by puppets, you know, or even being played in your love life. I mean, who wants to know that? I mean, that's a pretty scary thing. But more often than not, it has happened to others, and that's why I wrote the book, in terms of, you know, couples where they knew that their aliens were, you know, wanting them to be with a certain person or cause them to get married and have kids with a partner, and then setting them up with somebody else later who they weren't even married to. So I seem to think that this was much more than just a genetic study, that one would maybe think at first glance that this is done to put people together to study maybe offspring, but really it's not. It's more of an emotional harvesting, and what Barbara called, you know, it's the drama of the love obsession and all the different emotions that they're able to generate through staging and manipulating different areas of the life to either observe or just deliberately create these emotional energies.
You know, that movie The Forgotten touched upon...
Oh, yes.
It was a very strange film to begin
with. It was. Very weird.
Toward the end, that's what was revealed by the alien that was orchestrating drama in these people's lives, taking the mother's child. And he said basically, oh, we're interested in this unseen bond between the mother and child. We don't understand why it's so strong.
Interesting that you mentioned that part. Of course, there's so much to this, but... In another case, in The Love Bite, it's the Mia Adams and Jordan, who was also an FBI agent, by the way. And in her case, she was classic alien abductee, but she also had military abductions as well. And this FBI guy was sent to basically kind of spy on her. And it turned out that he was actually connected to the abduction phenomenon and, you know, basically encouraged to get involved with the FBI, but he was actually under mind control and part of this whole experiment. So one of the things that they were studying was, they called it non-tangible energy field bonding between, let's say, the mother and the child. But in their case, what happened to her is she got abducted. She was already abducted by aliens, right? And it was believed by the FBI agent through his contacts who in the FBI and the NSA and the spooky organizations that they were basically following her because they thought she was a hybrid. Mm-hmm. So they thought that she already had some kind of, what, alien genetics, you know? Mm-hmm. But anyway, she ended up getting abducted and having some of her egg removed. And then what they did is they removed the, what you call the nuclear DNA of the egg, mm-hmm. and then using that egg to be implanted into another female with putting in her nuclear DNA along with the sperm donor, so that in essence the child is the product of three parents. Okay, so the FBI agent happened to be the child, and he didn't even know it until later, who was the mitochondrial son of Mia. So basically, you know, he didn't have her nuclear DNA, but he had the mitochondrial DNA. So the study was the non-tangible energy fields between the mother and the son, and it was only a mitochondrial connection. But still, I guess he thought that that was part of the study, that the aliens were studying this, and the military, who were either in conjunction with that, were also kind of engineering this whole drama so that they got together and then could just study this whole interaction to see what would happen. But in that particular case, it's very interesting because the guy named Jordan, of course, it's a code name, it's not his real name, mm-hmm. he knew that there were competing different organizations within, let's say, the Department of the Navy and other organizations, maybe associated with the NSA and those who studied extraterrestrial types of reports, so that they often conflicted with each other, where there would be, let's say, one group who might be working in liaison with some of the aliens who wanted to put this couple together for the reasons of studying this, you know, non-tangible energy field bond. And then there's other groups who knew what was happening and didn't like what was happening, and they tried to interfere. So there was competing interferences going on in both their case. So in her story, of course, she had, you know, tapped phones and, you know, weird messages on the phone and weird, you know, dreams and just unusual things that just didn't add up.
Another case in your book, Love Bite, that was published in 1999, is with Angelina and Steve. And
oh, yeah.
It involved the appearance of these alien beings. Can you describe what that love bite was about and the creatures that were witnessed?
Okay, well, with the Angelina case, she lived in the high desert of Southern California, where there's a lot of activity in certain areas believed to be where there's underground bases, military bases, as well as underground subterranean reptilian, what they call reptilian nests. And so she just lived in an area where there was a lot of activity anyway, but she grew up as an abductee. It was part of her bloodline, and she, ever since childhood, she always had encounters with not only the grays, but also different types of what she believed to be reptilian-type creatures, as well as the military. And actually, the military were involved a lot more in her case, but they appeared to be working in liaison with certain reptilian and gray aliens, especially reptilians, where they would actually use her as an operative to do, like, different kinds of remote viewing or spying and different kinds of things, jobs that they basically had her do. So they would take her and then use her on these different ops under mind control, and the aliens would also use her for their own purposes. So it was as if they were used in conjunction with each other. Like, the military could use these people as long as they kept their deal with the aliens, and then the aliens use them for their own purposes, and they have to honor each other's agreements. It's as if the military were under the control of the aliens and couldn't necessarily do everything about what the reptilians were doing to her. So there was a lot of sexual assault and what I call the kundalini activation of the psi factor in her case, and she was already a very clairvoyant person anyway, but with the reptilian sexual manipulations, it basically could amplify her kundalini and her psychic abilities, so that when she was used on, you know, remote viewing ops and different things, that she was more capable, basically, because her energy field was just amped up. And that's just part and parcel of the modus operandi of what they do. As far as the one that she was set up with, it was another man who I don't think... he was only, quote, an abductee, whatever, for the purpose of the bonding, but he really wasn't somebody who was, let's say, a multiple abductee who had encounters their whole life kind of thing. And in her case, they only bonded them probably several months before they finally met. And because she always had such a good memory, you know, she remembered how they would put them together, you know, months before in these lucid, dreamlike abduction memories. And remember, you know, okay, you're going to be with this guy, and then, you know, you're going to meet him at such and such place, and da-da-da-da. And so, you know, she would meet this man later, you know, in a very coincidental manner, and then she remembers, and she would remember a lot more, but he didn't remember anything. He just felt as if she was very familiar and was just compelled to be with her and just kind of had a love obsession, and a whole affair happened in their situation. So she also had a very difficult marriage because her husband didn't believe her that she was really having experiences, or he couldn't handle it. So he went into denial and was really abusive, and so she couldn't get any emotional support, which is one reason why, you know, she came to my group and we met, so that we could, you know, share things and get some support about what was happening, because these things are so difficult. Nobody believes you, and if you go to a doctor, they'll call you crazy.
Right.
So anyway, some of the reptilians that she saw that we had someone sketch were what we call they called them the T-Rex types, and these actually were a different type. The other kind usually interfered in her case, and the usual ones you hear about who are what we call like the handlers, sometimes female MILABs or abductees will have what we call a main alien handler, And so she would have sometimes a reptilian handler, which would be the different type, the taller ones that they call the warrior class or the merchant reptilians. I've heard people refer to them. They're the ones who are about, you know, 7 feet tall, very muscular and very military type of energy and very aggressive as well. But the other ones where there's a picture in the book of the smaller ones, we call it the T-Rex, little baby dino types, mm-hmm. with the snouts and the small little short arms. Well, she had these type visit her home. What was interesting is that in her home, she already had established, I don't know if it's because of the area she lived in or the repeated encounters, because they often have what we call interdimensional portals in their own home. And this happens through repeated doorway openings with a particular technology, or it's because of where they live. So they'll have portals open up in their homes, and then they'll just pretty much have a permanent area where the aliens are always popping in and out of this, like, one area of the home we call, like, the portal, you know? Mm-hmm. So in her home, you know, one of these portal places was a closet in one of the children's bedrooms. These little T-Rex aliens would pop in, and they kept coming in and out of the closet. One of the daughters kept reporting, you know, there's this being that keeps coming in my closet. And so she became friends with this little entity, apparently, and would lay out her toys in front of the closet so when it came out, it would play with her toys. And she actually heard it in the room, you know, poking around on these little fake little phones, making little noises, and this entity would appear physically in the room through this portal. Anyway, one day, I guess it was broad daylight, one of these entities came in her home, and I don't know if it came through that particular portal, but it entered into her home and caused her to become paralyzed by directing this wand-like object at her and actually levitated her in the air, like in daylight in her home. So it was a strange thing that would happen with these beings, and she discovered later, and you know, I'm not sure this is testimony, but that these particular types of beings, of reptilians, who are these small T-Rex ones, she claimed that they actually were associated with the underground military base where underground and an adjacent location next to the underground base, there was what they called nests of these subterranean creatures that lived kind of like in an interdimensional but also underground location kind of next to this military base. Mm. And that sometimes when there's interdimensional portals, what will happen is sometimes, let's say the military or the aliens come through, but because it's an interdimensional doorway, you could have other beings who are passing through come and use this doorway, just like bugs can come through your door when you leave your door open, you know? So sometimes other things could come in and out of your home simply because you have a doorway in there. Like sometimes you'll see ghosts and different things or different kinds of beings that are not aliens, but there's just different interdimensional beings that may come and go through the same portal. So that actually happened to her a lot. She had a lot of paranormal activity, and we actually went and visited and, you know, tried to case out the place one night. Like, actually, James Bartley came with a couple colleagues and wanted to do some reptilian stakeout with these, like, little T-Rex beings because they kept popping up in, mm-hmm. in the child's bedroom, you know?
You and James and...
Yeah, James Bartley. Actually, he went with some other colleagues to check out what was happening and wanted to do some recordings of these beings when they would pop in and out. And you have to interview him about what happened, but I know that he did have some kind of encounter with a being, but they basically knocked him out so that they bopped him on the face, and then he blacked out for the rest of the night and woke up with a bruise on his face. So something was there, but he didn't remember exactly what happened. So there was a lot of anomalous, spooky activity in that whole area that she grew up with. And you know, it was actually Apple Valley, California, in the Mojave.
Well, that makes sense to me, the interdimensional aspect of it and the, you know, the possibility of something underground that has a technology and an interaction with the military.
And I think they try to keep a lid on it, you know, because they'll know, like, if there's some reports of a nest, that they find a nest or they have encounters, then the military actually quickly go in to try to put a lid on something. And one of the things that happened that was a little bit scary was that Angelina was concerned and thought, well, you know, this thing has been showing up in my house way too many times. I think she called the cops, the local cops, and wanted to report that there's this unusual creature that keeps, you know, invading their home, and is there anything they can do about it? So she did get paid a visit by some, I don't know if it was two or three men, might have been three because they usually come in threes, and they really weren't the cops, but they were some kind of spook. I just call it a spook, who, you know, basically came to ask her about what she'd been seeing and then told her basically not to talk about it. And if she talked about it anymore, she would end up in a body bag on the bottom of the ocean. So basically she was threatened to shut up and not talk about any more of this. So she did. She didn't talk any more about that to any local agency or anything. Nobody believes you anyway when these kinds of things happen, let's face it.
We are speaking with Evie Lorgan about her books, Love Bite, Alien Interference in Human Love Relationships, and The Dark Side of Cupid. We'll return after the break. If you're just now tuning in, we're speaking with Evie Lorgan about her books, Love Bite, Alien Interference in Human Love Relationships, and The Dark Side of Cupid. What ways have you found that are effective to protect against continued parasite siphoning after an initial attack?
Yeah, that's a good question. I suppose it depends on the type of being or interaction that someone's having. Like in the case of someone who's had a multiple, what I call multiple visitation or abduction histories, or if they're somebody involved with the military and they're used in some kind of secret project, they may have to take a much more aggressive way to deal with this because they need to get into recovery of their traumas and maybe move out of the town or get away from family or people that are known to be handlers and assets in the program. So it may take many years to get out from under that kind of constant targeting. But if it's a simple psychic attack kind of situation, it might be easier to get out of by either, if it's a location, moving out of the location or clearing your home or cleaning up what I call the doorways of entrance of these particular types of beings. And it may depend on the type of being and the person. Yeah, and I talk about that in The Dark Side of Cupid in terms of, you know, if you're having a psychic vampire type of situation going on, you know, how to set boundaries and maybe know what's going on.
From your research and experience, could you explain the interactions with, you know, a variety of aliens and a certain aspect of the military that seemed to help facilitate the abductions behind the scenes? I wondered if... is that human interaction part of an illusion that's being created, or do you think the MyLabs, where there are human military personnel involved, do you think that's a very real thing?
Well, it's real. There is human involvement on a definite level, but there is also illusions being played in the perceptions and minds of the individuals with what we call a lot of virtual reality scenarios or just plain manipulation of perception, which many of these beings can do. And so even Barbara Bartholik had found that in some cases there were people thinking that, you know, a human was involved or a military, but it was part of the alien mind control making them think a particular person was there, because they could put screens on you to make you think you're basically having sex with your favorite movie star, or you're having a an encounter with somebody, and they're using an illusion. Like the reptilians in particular can have an incredible ability to be chameleons in terms of taking different forms and manipulating your perception, especially if they parasite someone in the terms of the alien parasitism factor, that the parasitism itself can cause a manipulation and distortion of perception. So we have both things going on, and it's not an either-or black-and-white situation, which some people prefer believing that. I think it gives them a sense of security that, it's all human mind control projects. There's no such thing as bad aliens, you know. There's some people who believe that it's all of these abductions are really some kind of human covert black op thing using aliens as a cover, and then some of them actually do that, but not all of them can be explained this way. So there really is aliens, or what we're calling aliens, for lack of a better term. But there's a lot of mind control, plain and simple.
The idea of parasitism in insects and mammals, and those one benefits from the other, there are a lot of techniques involved in those types of relationships, and they seem to be playing out on a larger scale with the human beings and these other creatures as well, which is really interesting. And yeah, it seems to be a very complex relationship with humans. Like, for example, I think Carla Turner mentioned this. Would you be concerned about the spiritual evolution of your livestock?
They certainly don't want us to awaken too much, I think, at least the ones who are using us as a resource. So they want to prevent that awakening as much as they can, which is really one of the reasons why, or how I stumbled across what I felt was really important in my own research. I called it the spiritual detracting efforts of the aliens, when abductees and people having experiences sought to uncover or get to the truth of their experiences, they were often assailed with different kinds of disruptions and interferences, including the love bite or relationships being destroyed or set up, depending on the situation. So it was as if there are a faction of those who want to keep us dummied down so that we can continue to be good slaves or resources for them. And then there are others who are playing a different role, where they could be acting like guardians and teachers and benevolent space brothers. But, you know, in many of the cases, they turned out to be just masquerading in order to get the obeisance of the person, just to, you know, basically tell them anything they want to hear in order to keep them under some kind of control or deception. So it's really hard to know. I mean, the good guys versus the bad guys, because sometimes they play this whole good cop, bad cop thing. So it really makes you question, who are these entities, who are these gods and deities, and what is religion really about, and does it really help us, or is it actually enslaving us? So that's why I guess people like Dr. Corrado Malanga and other people that I'm learning from who do spiritual clearings, they do not use, let's say, the protection of a particular deity for protecting them from these other entities. They're just using our spiritual power and awareness as the mode of power to protect oneself from interference, and learning how to access and connect with that.
Following along the lines of a sovereign citizen.
Yes, very much so, because what we've learned is that, wow, you know, they just use one thing after another. I mean, even in my own life and people that I've studied, it was as if the aliens, whenever you start to awaken, they'll kind of throw anything at you, whatever you're believing in the moment, whether or not it's Jesus or it's a shaman or a particular spirit guide or whatever. They use whatever is the operating belief system in your mind to work through and manipulate through. So it's quite frustrating, really, when you realize that, oh my God, you know, they're pretending to be Jesus, you know, and it can really wreak havoc on a lot of people's lives, because it, you know, people get cognitive dissonance, you know what I mean? They can't deal with the powerlessness that this implies with what our belief systems about God and religion really is.
Right. Why would God allow these creatures appear as and fool them?
Yeah, and it does. I mean, it brings up a sense of betrayal and rage and powerlessness, which really is the switch which keeps people really from looking at what's happening. They basically have to turn away. It's too scary. It's as if they're programmed by the matrix itself so that they can't see what's happening and they just look the other way, or you can't, it's like they have a blinders over their eyes. And some people literally cannot see and cannot be aware of what they're not ready or able to see. Some people defend the matrix with their life and with hostility and rage over those who will try to tell them that, well, you know, it's really not the way you think it is, but they're not going to listen to you.
Have you noticed there is a similarity between the interactions of some of these alien groups that appear as insects or reptiles or species that are on this planet, but they use the same behaviors to manipulate their prey?
In fact, there's one researcher, Giuseppe Platania from Italy, who wrote a book, The Alien Apocalypse, and I think it's in Italian, actually, but he did a study of these different kinds of beings throughout history and religious and cult circles who had very similar patterns. He called them extra-materialized entities, but they may take on different forms and do basically the similar kinds of things in terms of what channeled entities do, you know, giving warnings and saying there's going to be an apocalypse and you have to follow this particular line of thinking or you will be punished by this god or all these bad things will happen. And so there's similar behaviors that take place throughout history. There's another man named Truman Cash who wrote some of his experiences, and I don't remember the name of the book. He's got a couple, but he was somebody who had alien abduction history and did many different memory retrieval techniques that didn't necessarily involve hypnosis, but they were good methods that worked for him, and then he actually helped others. And he remembered not only abductions in his current life, and I don't know what types of beings, it could have been the classic, I don't know which ones they were, but he remembered in former lifetimes he also had abductions and contacts with these beings from UFOs that were like the Egyptian Ra and Ptah and what he called the serpent staff Pleiadians, but they actually looked humans but had these serpent staff, I guess, staff that represented a particular belief system. And in these other lifetimes, he recalled being chosen as one of their prophets to carry out rituals and a certain cult-like belief system in whatever society, and it was basically he was there... their agent for their religion or whatever their particular belief system was. They would set up cults in all these different countries throughout history working for these particular beings because he basically did rituals and basically paid obeisance to them and worked for them until they realized he didn't want to do this anymore throughout these lifetimes because they were a bunch of liars, and he said no. So these kinds of things happen actually lifetime to lifetime in many people's experience if they remember. So there's a connection between things that have been happening in ancient history and things that are happening now, and they may choose a different form or a different window dressing based on our contemporary belief systems. This is probably something that Jacques Vallée noticed as well, you know, in some of his books, Messengers of Deception.
Right. I haven't read that. It's on my list.
Yeah.
Well, I noticed that you've gone to an area of research by authors in different countries, and I suppose that's really the way to go, to find out another angle on this.
Yes, because I think there's a certain thing in America being played out in terms of, you know, how, I don't know, it's like the popular opinion thing will be more set in a certain area, but if you go outside the U.S. and you talk to people from the Balkans and you talk to people from Italy and you talk to people from different countries who don't necessarily have the peer pressure to believe or promote something of a certain belief system, you may come to find different ways of looking at it. Like Dr. Malanga, you know, he looked at it as it is. I mean, he saw that there's this parasitism factor going on that others weren't really reporting. They just weren't seeing it, or they didn't feel it was important, or didn't have anywhere to put it within their framework of how they understood reality. But the parasitism factor is key, in my view, in terms of what we observe with the, let's say, the love connections that are being staged, set up, orchestrated, or disrupted, that actually plays a big part in the whole ultimate, what I call the energy vampirism factor, which... really, that's what I think it boils down to it with respect to the ones that I'm calling malevolent, for lack of a better term. So So that's why I wrote The Dark Side of Cupid, because many people were reporting similar dynamics and relationships, but they weren't necessarily people who had what I call the multiple abduction histories, like in The Love Bite. But they also had the dynamics of the drama of the love obsession or the interference factor, which showed a lot of the same paranormal tendencies and characteristics, but they didn't necessarily have UFO encounters or alien abductions. But what they observed was like what we call a third-party entity, an interdimensional being of some sort who was overshadowing one partner or responsible for maybe manipulating or engineering the relationship. And so there was several different types that I did describe in The Dark Side of Cupid, like the ones that people perceive with their own perceptions. And so really, it's just kind of like a clairvoyant bird's eye view of what happens when you have paranormal interference in love relationships.
Yeah, The Dark Side of Cupid was difficult for me to get through. It was interesting. It was very disturbing.
Yes, it is. I think that's what people run away from. They don't want to know that there's, you know, there's some dark elements to this world and this reality where we are actually being predated upon by certain types of interdimensional beings that feed on our energy field in some capacity where we, you know, we think we're at the top of the food chain and we're not. And so that is quite disturbing, especially if we feel like we can't necessarily see it with our eyes, but you know it's happening. So that was actually what was interesting about Joe Slate's work, because at least with his work, he was able to demonstrate with Kirlian photography, for example, how you can identify the energy field that surrounds someone, their aura, and there's like a fine energy field that surrounds each person's body that can actually be tapped into by a psychic vampire. And if that takes place, you can see, let's say, a before and after picture of a Kirlian thumbprint, where there's a break in the energy field of where, let's say, they were affected by energy vampirism. And so I think that does happen, that we do have subtle energy not only outside of our bodies but inside of our bodies flowing through meridians, like in Chinese medicine they talk about that. And also we call the energy centers in our body known as chakras in some traditions. And so I guess I did some research with psychic vampires to make a point in The Dark Side of Cupid, how there were similarities with what people reported with real psychic vampires and symptoms of the love bite that had to do with actually love obsession, and how and when a psychic vampire, let's say, is with someone sexually, that they can literally feed into the chakra systems on a deeper level than, let's say, somebody who's not a psychic vampire. And that certain psychic vampires have these paranormal abilities, and what is described by at least one referenced author that I wrote about, his name was Dixon, and he wrote a book about psychic vampires. And so he talked about how their energy field is different because they have these energy tendrils that can go out and reach into other people's energy bodies. And that is what I think is happening in The Dark Side of Cupid in some of these cases, where the person, one partner is perceived as, let's say, the major psychic vampire. So, and this, I think, is responsible for what we call the third-party entity that either overshadows or fully hosts someone. And so this actually we knew about years ago, but I never wrote about it because it was actually so disturbing, nobody really wanted to listen. But
wow.
Sometimes people observe what they call another person is being overshadowed by another entity, and for clairvoyant perception, they'd be able to observe this, actually, with like an overshadowed lizard-like being over their aura, or, you know, they see claws coming out of their hands, like in this shadowy way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's different things that people observe.
The psychic vampirism, something that I was starting to get into a number of years ago after talking with Dr. Slate, and we took calls during that interview. It was very interesting. We got some calls later. The public affairs director told me that a person called because they couldn't get through and said that they belonged to a group of psychic vampires on Long Island. And they said, oh, we're nice people, but we do need to feed off of you.
And I've heard that, there's a different race of people and there might be different types. And, you know, I've heard this before. that there's different types. And all I know is that many of the people in the book that I interviewed who experienced this, they were able to observe in their experience that, let's say, one of their partner, let's say the love bite partner, like in the more I'm talking about the severe cases where the partner exhibited psychopathic tendencies and paranormal abilities, such as a kind of astral travel and astral melding where they kept interfering and interacting with them in their dreams, or psychic melding, or what I call telesthesia, where you could literally feel their energy field interacting with you from a distance. Or they're able to observe, like, let's say when they were having sex with the person, that they saw, you know, like a lizard being or a demon snake-headed being or something else, like overshadowing them when they were having sex. So they tended to make the, basically say, wait, this person's hosted by something else. He's not just a human. So
yeah, that doesn't sound good.
No, no. And it could be something that's different from maybe what some people claim to be. And I guess it really depends on, you know, how people, what their experience is with that.
Eve, could you describe some of your interference experiences for listeners, either by the military, government agents, and or alien?
Okay. Well, I know when I first started doing my support group way back, it was actually in the late 90s, I had several people who attended, one in particular who was a classic person who had alien abduction history, but also claimed to work for the government in actually San Diego County, where actually he did artistry work, where he drew pictures of aliens for the military, so he claimed. But I remember at that time in my life, I was actually a practicing Christian, right, because I thought that that was helpful, you know, to have some kind of spiritual thing and a protection. So I would actually pray for my people. So I would pray for my abductees who were in the group and pray for my family. And so one night, and I don't know if it was not long after a support group meeting, I was paid a visit by this really tall, interdimensional alien being that looked like a very tall gray, except it had black skin, but it looked like a classic gray, except it was a lot taller, and it wore like a sparkly robe. It was like the sparkly robe with a big cape, but it didn't have a hood. And this being basically said, you know, stay away from my person. Basically, it was this man. He said, stay away from him, you know, he's mine. And this particular being put projections in my mind and, like, paralyzed me and did something that was really just mean and shameful, just to show that he had control and was trying to warn me away from, basically, you know, praying for him, praying for that man. So that was one of the things that happened early on. And other things that happened would be a lot of course, phone disturbances and having your phone cut off, like right before support group time. And usually would happen like within a week before support group or after. On one occasion, there was a helicopter that followed someone home, and it was actually an orange helicopter, which was unusual because usually they're the black type. And that one somebody reported to me after he left my support group. He was followed by a helicopter. On another occasion, when I was talking to Barbara Bartholik on the phone, we were talking about not only the love obsession, but what we had discovered in some of my own experiences. There was a particular archetypal, powerful being that was actually directing some of these dramas and love obsession dramas in my life and other people's lives. And there was a core group of us that kept having similar experiences with what a being that we called this father figure. And some people called him the Widow's Peak Man, but he was this powerful, enigmatic, archetypal being who would sometimes appear to certain people. And so we just got on this conversation with, you know, do you think this is the being behind such and such? And then we would get, like, loud static on the phone, and then we got on a conversation with how she recognized a particular person who was a well-known, let's just say a well-known researcher, who resembled very much one of these occult figures called Saint Germain that seems to live forever throughout these different places, points in history. And I don't know why she just found out that this person, she just felt like this was a Saint Germain kind of thing going on. And right when she said that, a black helicopter, you know, just buzzed right over my house, went down my street, and then circled the house and then went right back. And then, you know, I ended up hanging up because it was just so disturbing that, you know, whatever, you know, little weird things like that, and let's say fights with family members, and even had an incident where at the time my son was quite young. There was an incident with grays, I think at least three, that came and paid us a visit after I was doing research with another researcher, and basically it was a, I don't know, it was like a punishment thing, because they didn't like me speaking out about what I was doing, and so they would kind of try to intimidate me, and sometimes in different forms, and impress things in my mind. And one particular time they did come to the house, and they were walking down the hallway, and not only did my son see them, but a visiting cousin from another country actually saw them also, you know, going down the hallway towards my room. So I would have things like that, like there was a portal in the house that I lived in, where a certain area would just, this light would, it's really strange, but they would come and go from this particular area in the house. It was always this one spot. And one day I was trying to, I knew they were coming because I could hear them. So I hurried up and opened up the door, and I tried to hurry up and, you know, find them before they came to see what was happening. And then all that I was able to see was this light that shot up from the floor to the ceiling, and then it was this circular pattern, and then it would disappear. So I could never really catch them in the act. But even before the love bite, when I was getting ready to bring out the love bite the day before I basically launched the book, which was, I think, right before Easter in the year of 2000, actually. And it was like a big moment for me to, you know, get my first book out, and it was going to be released that next day. And it was a Saturday night, I believe, where, you know, I knew I was having interference and I could sense a presence. And it was so scary, you know, I couldn't sleep most of the night. But that whole night I heard something basically clomping down the hallway all night long in front of my bedroom, but it couldn't enter my bedroom. But this thing was so heavy, it must have been 300 pounds. And it basically, you know, paced back and forth the hallway all night long. And it's just weird. Yeah.
Well, I would imagine it would take a lot of courage to produce these books amid the interference and experiences that you had gone through. And I appreciate you going down the list there. That's going to wrap up the first hour with this interview. Our guest is Eve Lorgan. She's the author of two books, Love Bite, Alien Interference in Human Love Relationships, and The Dark Side of Cupid. And Eve, if listeners want to learn more about your work, where can they find that?
The best place is probably on my website, which is evelorgan.com. And I think it's still under alienlovebite.com as well. I'm also on Facebook for my book called The Dark Side of Cupid under Eve Lorgan, so you can contact me there as well.
This is going to conclude the first hour of the interview. I really appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Join me again next Monday, 10 p.m.
Angel came down from heaven yesterday. She stayed with me just long enough to rescue me. And she told me a story yesterday about the sweet love between the moon and the deep blue sea. And then she spread her wings high over me. She said she's gonna come back tomorrow. And I said, fly on, my sweet angel. Fly on through the sky. Fly on, my sweet angel. Tomorrow I'm gonna be by your side.
Sure enough, this morning came unto me. Silver winged silhouette against a child's sunrise. And my angel, she said unto me, today is the day for you to rise. Take my hand, you're gonna be my man, you're gonna rise. And then she took me high over yonder.